Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. Glad you could join me today. For those of you that have are regular viewers, you can tell that I've been out in my garden, and so I brought all the pollen back inside with me. I apologize for having a husky voice, but I'm not sick. I'm just allergic. I want to thank Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. Please look for him on the internet. He's a native storyteller, and he and his wife have done an amazing job of preserving a technique and an art that all of us should be aware of, and that is the native stories that they tell their children that preserve their history and their cosmology. So check him out, please. I have Les Jensen on with me today, and he's written a book called Citizen King, The New Age of Power. And it's an amazing book. It's going to make you think. It's going to make you reevaluate and maybe make you a little more secure in how to pull your personal power into utilization within your life. And this is what Amazon has to say about the book. Before you were born, your soul had a vision of what your life could be. To honor that vision can bring a deep sense of satisfaction and fulfillment into your life, producing feelings of joy, happiness, and gratitude. To engage that vision of your life and trust yourself is to turn on the creative expression of your own potential. When you walk authentically as yourself, all possibilities come within your reach, and the vision of your dreams comes into focus. You may not know every detail, though you trust in the story of your heart and soul as they feed you a vision of what is possible. It is intentional creation itself. Your own potential has no limits, and to create a flow of its expression brings an ever-unfolding story of genuine satisfaction and gratitude as you honor your purpose here on the earth plane. To have big dreams and take bold actions creates the most exciting and adventurous life, fulfilling the vision of your soul. Will you embrace the bold ideas of your heart and soul and trust there is a way for them to manifest? Can you do this from a place of personal forgiveness and compassion? When you master that, you start to purify your own heart, the source of your authentic power. When you put action into your inspiration, you give your soul influence in your life. Your soul becomes free to express as it intends. This is soul-level living. Your ego's role shifts to fulfilling your inspiration with action. It is you acting as a citizen king. The path to living an exceptional life in your own authentic kingdom affords you a genuine sense of fulfillment and joy. It is the new age of what personal power looks like. It is our human potential fulfilled. Les is an author, radio host, speaker, energy master, and visionary, committed to promoting personal empowerment and his life purpose of being service to others. He's an amazing man, and he has put forth a book that has amazing potential for people who read it and decide to incorporate it into their lives. Welcome to the show, Les.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back.
Oh, it's a joy to have you. It really is. And I think one of the things, especially today, with life being sort of turned upside down for everybody so that they can take a good look at everything and make new choices, it's important for people to understand the potential that they carry within them. And I think this is an amazing book. One of the things that you emphasize in it, of course, is imagination, dreams, and creativity, all of which I think are the fuel that makes our life move forward. And I think you've done an amazing job of that. So many people look at imagination and creativity and those qualities and just think that, you know, they're make-believe and we don't pay attention to them. And in reality, that's where we should really be paying attention.
They seem to be the fulcrum for whatever might be in your path. In other words, when you bump up against resistance or struggle in your life, the medicine, the wisdom, the inspiration that can help you traverse that, it comes from something that doesn't already exist in your mind per se. So the imagination is like a storehouse of infinite potential, and when you approach it with an intent, it can feed you ideas and possibilities to help you transcend whatever you're bumping up against.
Yeah, I call the imagination the well of the experiences of every past life you've had. And same thing. It's cosmic consciousness that's available to us, and it comes to us in dreams, inspiration, daydreams. I mean, it comes in so many different synchronicities in our life. Often come from that quality within us that is trying to give us a message, and so often we just aren't paying attention, which is frustrating.
I think there's a muse quality to it. I remember Einstein would talk about solving a difficult problem, and he'd sit there and throw his analytical mind at it over and over and over again, and then he'd say, "What the hell?" and get up and go take a walk. And in that non-mind mode, he would get oftentimes the inspiration that would give him the insight or the breakthrough of what he was trying to more or less force with his ego, with his mind. So I don't think there's any real limit to how we can use that. For example, you can intend to create a new form of energy or a new type of medicine as an intent, and when you dump your intention and attention into that, you magically draw inspiration. You magically draw to you a vibrational equivalent. You kind of enter a new neighborhood of consciousness by creating in your own psyche a desire that wasn't there before, and in that muse effect, you can be the download. You can be the inspiration that brings a new paradigm, a new outcome for not only yourself, but for humanity.
Well, I think what fascinated me was you had three divisions here. You had the ego, you had the heart and you had the soul. As far as levels of consciousness or awareness, and you explain how it depends on where you're working from, what level of intellect consciousness that you are able to draw upon. You want to kind of explain that, because the ego to me is something that you know, everybody has one, and I don't think people understand exactly what the ego is and where it comes from.
Well, sure. Nobody had an ego the day they were born, yet you had source consciousness or a soul mm-hmm. presence, and you had a heart space. And on day one as a baby, your heart and your soul, you're just chilling. You're
yeah.
be chilling for a while. And I think your soul really looks very intentionally, very carefully at the family dynamic of what you're going to incarnate into, because it is in your family of origin that the ego is created or fabricated. So your family of origin introduces you to the cognitive process. They say, this is a chair, this is a table. They're literally building the cognitive engine of what will become your ego. But not only do they assign symbols to the objects, I think a much more powerful aspect is they assign the value of the symbols. And so when we talk about ego, let's fast forward into the adult life. Your ego is a template. There's many metaphors we could use to kind of understand it. A computer program, sure. If you grew an ego that's a four-function calculator, and you're trying to embody a spreadsheet mindset, there's some reprogramming that needs to happen, so to speak. And the ego can get in the way in several different ways. The ego can easily consume 100% of your consciousness. In other words, pushing out room, space for your heart and your soul to inspire you. You're looking at your phone, you're on social media, you got monkey mind, and you're literally running like 100% of your consciousness from your ego. And I don't think that's too uncommon for a large sector of humanity. But the ego can be reconstituted in the adult arena. You can dissolve whatever doesn't work for you, and you can construct really any kind of a modality that you choose. And it doesn't present a problem, and it doesn't present a problem until your heart and your soul show you a new idea or a new vision of your life. For example, the first time I ever got the inspiration to write a book, my ego took that idea and just, you know, flogged it into oblivion. And there was, in other words, from the mental construct of my family of origin, there was no place in my mental apparatus that I could land the idea of me being an author, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So I had to create space. I had to, a very powerful thing we can do is just write down our inspiration, because it brings it into the physical form and it's there the next day. If you're unloading the cars, groceries from the car, or you're in the shower or something and an inspiration comes in, and oftentimes the very next thought, we drag it up into our brain and try to rationalize it. it might not survive the day, but if you write it down, that same inspiration can be reintroduced tomorrow and the next day.
Right. I think that as I look at my life going back, my ego, for instance, when I was just out of high school and going to college, had been really formed by my parents and my, you know, the religious training that I gotten and my school, and, you know, it sort of formed a, like a time capsule for me. So that when something happened, there was a knee-jerk reaction, and that knee-jerk reaction came from when I was much younger. As I got older, I changed because, you know, I dissolved some of those knee-jerk reactions, but not all. I'm still working on some of them. But it's sort of like as you grow, if you're into making changes in your life and expanding your perspectives and broadening your horizons, you get to the point where it's, I'm not limited. And you know, I had the same thing. When I was in high school, I was told, don't bother applying to colleges, you'll never get in, and even if you get in, you'll flunk out. And it almost prevented me from applying to college, because I was accepting other people's interpretations of me as a person.
Right.
And needless to say, I applied to college, I got into them, and I, you know, graduated. So the ego, sometimes we have these leftover knee jerks that haunt us almost as we, you know, in our adult life, you know, when we come up against situations, the ego will react in a way that it's been programmed to at another time in our life. And we sometimes find ourselves not taking advantage of a lot of the possibilities and potentialities that are there for us. And when you recognize that and reprogram it and expand it, it does add a greater richness to your life, absolutely.
Oh, indeed. The fast forward a couple of decades, and I think my ego genuinely appreciates and values the inspiration from my heart and my soul. And so when new programming comes into my psyche, my ego is genuinely excited about the new tangent, the new direction that my life is going to take. And I guess the difference is in the past, my ego would try to rationalize or vet or, you know, measure the merit of my heart, my soul's inspiration. And now I understand that my heart, my soul operate in a non-linear realm of potential. And I don't have to understand. I don't have to see the whole path. And if my heart and my soul are downloading new information to me, there's a reason for it. And so I have a much quicker acceptance of it, and mm-hmm. I cherish it and honor it with intention, attention, and action.
Yeah, I have to agree. There was a time where I never would have, you know, I wouldn't have taken a lot of the leaps of faith that I have taken in the last 20 years because, you know, I would have analyzed it and gone and asked a lot of friends what they thought and taken their advice and, you know, gotten totally confused and then not done anything. And so, you know, you get to a point. If you learn to trust your soul and your heart, I mean, you can't go wrong. You can't make any wrong turns. You know, sometimes you have a little bit longer to go on some things, but there's nothing, you can't do something wrong. But where does karma come into play with all of this?
karma is that dirt that won't come out of the laundry.
Okay.
How does karma play into this? I like really simple analogies. I like the notion of, so what is karma? Karma is anything from the past that's influencing you in the present.
Okay.
And although that's very simple, I think it kind of serves as a simple way to look at it. I think karma is really impersonal. You know, you can think of gravity, and although we cannot see gravity itself, we can see the effect of gravity. And gravity will gladly tumble me down the stairs and break my neck. And it'll also allow me to go downhill skiing in a beautiful mountain setting, having the time of my life. And the gravity's impersonal as to which one I experience. When I, the cosmic 2x4 that cracked me open was, it was a bug on the windshield moment. My whole life changed in just a very short period of time. And what had happened in that moment was an immense amount of emotional energy came out of my subconscious. And in the moment, it startled me because here's this river, here's this volcano of energy flowing out of my psyche. And I remember kind of asking the energy, who the hell are you? And the anger's like, I don't care. I don't care how you experience me. I am what I am, and see you later, bye.
Yeah.
And I had realized that anger was a pivotal emotion in my life, karmically speaking. So had you talked to me before that event, if I had any issues at all with anger, I'd say, no, not at all. I'm a lighthearted guy. I don't get mad. Anger is not a prominent aspect of my life. And I would have been so completely and totally wrong because anger was a very decisive aspect of my life. My ego was scared to death of anger. And so my ego would do anything it could to avoid any choice that might move me towards anger. Subconsciously, I would avoid anything that might, that just might bring about an angry response so my boss could belittle me and I'd just take it. I was so afraid of anger, and I had an immense amount of anger in my subconscious. So if I'm talking about karma, that's karma. I had so many decisions that were completely off the table every day of my life because they might elicit an angry response. So what is karma? Karma is my consciousness from the past. In this case, anger. My karma is the consciousness, my consciousness from my past that I've suppressed into my subconscious. And the mechanism of karma is as impersonal as gravity. So if you're having a difficult karmic repetitive pattern in your life, you can flip it in an instant and reprogram a completely different relationship to that karma, if that makes sense.
It does, but who or what determines what karma comes into a lifetime with you?
Well, we bring some from our past lives. There is a continuation, if so to speak, of. I think we take on. I mean, a lifetime can. I'm sorry, a soul can have 1,000 incarnations, more, less, whatever. And over the total storyline, if you will, I think we have seasons of karma. In other words, certainly in this lifetime, some of the karmic lessons I've incarnated to teach myself about is anger. And I think it would be very safe to say that in my in my previous incarnation, and anger would have been a prominent part. So I'm in a season. It's like you go from kindergarten to PhD, and now you're in high school learning American history. Well, you're not going to learn American history in kindergarten, and if your PhD is in biochemistry, you might not take it there too, but in your high school year, that's what you're learning. And so I would say that some of the karma we bring from our past, but in this lifetime, my father, a World War II vet, had an immense amount of anger within him that he probably got from being forced to kill other people in the theater of war. And in my family dynamic, that anger was a decisive emotion. So I certainly picked up a lot of karma in this incarnation after my birth, and I probably brought some core elements with me from my past life, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I think one of the important things that you said was that we determine it. It's not like we go to an incarnation, the office of incarnation, and someone sits down with us and says, you know, we're going to put a little bit of this in and a little bit of that in, and it's not like you have a guidance counselor who tells you what you're going to work on the next lifetime. It's more or less, sorry, cat just jumped up. It's more or less, it's something that we do to and for ourselves. And
sure.
And so when we have determined what we're going to work on as far as this lifetime and incarnate, we've put ourselves into families or situations where we're going to be exposed to some of those knee-jerk things. And it's important for us to recognize those aspects. I look at my own life and I can see a couple of places where my reaction to something today is very similar to what it was when I was in high school. And it's sort of like, well, let's grow up a little bit. Let's pay a little attention to this. and let's realize that you have greater control over your life now than you did then, so you don't have to react that way. And that's bringing power into yourself. And that's what your book is about. It's claiming power that you haven't claimed before to make changes in your life now. And it doesn't mean, and you're very specific about it, and I love the fact that you say over and over and over and over again in the book, now you have to have something to eat, you have to have a source of income, and you have to have a place to live. You have to provide for your family. But then you can work on yourself at the same time. So in other words, you don't go off and become a hermit in order to make these changes. You do it while maintaining a life.
Oh, sure. I think the current of life bumps us up against our karma. I think the potential of a human persona, I mean, I'm going to tangent a little bit here. So in my book, Forgiven Sinner, God's Last Savior, I contemplated the notion of God with a big G. God with a big G coming to save our ass. So there's got to be millions, if not billions, of prayers prayed from suffering humans saying, please, God, end the war. Please, God, bring my son home. Please, God, end the suffering. Please, God, end the suffering on the planet, and zero times does a glowing orb come down from the sky. I mean, even like Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus Christ is a rock star. He's the personification of what is possible in human form. And he says, well, come on now, belly up to the bar. You're going to be doing everything I will do and more. But when God was on the cross being crucified before he checked out of this incarnation, he wasn't like a NASA ass away from saving humanity. It's not like he got close the first time he got here. He didn't get anywhere near close to saving humanity. When he was up on the cross, the Roman Empire was expanding their war plans. They were expanding their intent to conquer through brutality more and more countries. So Jesus wasn't the vehicle as a single persona to save humanity. When we surrender the predicament of humanity to a single savior system, we suck. Because is Jesus at a super savior school now, and when he comes back again, he's going to kick everybody's ass? BS. It was never intended that a single persona come into the human dynamic as in the role of savior of humanity. That's just not accurate. So what the hell is it going to look like? I suggest to you the most powerful substance on the planet is flesh and bones. You have to have a body. And when you have a body and then you surrender it to divine will, I mean, this scrawny little lawyer was in a vast country, and another country showed up with an army. I'm talking about Gandhi, India, and the British Empire. So Gandhi's this scrawny little lawyer, flesh and bones, and this war machine, this army shows up to conquer the country, and Gandhi doesn't even get an army. Gandhi didn't even get an army, and he ended up sending the army home, preserving the sovereignty and dominion of his country. So when we look at the dynamic that's going to save our human condition, it's legions of Jesus's. It's legions of Buddhas. It's legions of, quote, saviors, unquote. And that's you and me. Citizen King, the new age of power, wake up to our potential.
I totally agree with you, and the reality is that all of us have within us that connection to the Christ consciousness, to the Gandhi consciousness, to the you name it consciousness. We have access to that consciousness. But it's, do we embrace it and apply it to our lives and make it a part of our lives, or do we just look at it and say, isn't that cool? We have that spark, but I'll read it later, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I got a ton of books that I have stacked that I'm going to read later, and I don't know if later is going to come, but you know, if it does, I'll get them all read. But it's sort of like if you apply yourself, if you open yourself up to be a part of it, then you do become a part of it. But it's understanding that the intellect part of us often can't comprehend the majesty of what's available to us and potential inside.
Right.
So it's that balance that is so crucial. And I know when I came to the point where I understood that inspiration, creativity, and you know, the soul could influence my life if I trusted my heart. And trusting your heart. Now that doesn't mean trusting your heart to select the right lottery numbers. It means trust, because trust me, I tried it. It doesn't work. You know, I did. I tried it. It doesn't work. But making my life better and brighter by making sure that there's a creative process going on, making sure that there's an outlet for inspiration, whether it's writing or drawing or knitting or crocheting or just any form of creativity, making sure there is that channel for that material to flow through into my reality, has taken my life from black and white to technicolor.
Right. Very nice.
And there's a sense of joy that is just unbelievable. If, you know, when things don't go right, it's like, huh, I wonder where I screwed up. And you know, it's almost laughable the times that I have found myself analyzing something to the point that the value of it to my life is gone. You know, it's sort of like I take the clock apart and I can't put it back together.
Right.
So that intellectualizing some things just doesn't work. I mean, some things it does work, but for the most part, if it's an important aspect of your life, you intellectualize it, you rationalize it, you take it apart, you try to reason, you try to understand, you try to be safe, you try to be an adult. And by the time you're done with all of that, you can't remember why you did it in the first place. You know, the moment's gone.
I think it's kind of like flexing a muscle. It's, if you don't use your muscles, they go dormant and there's no rapport with them. Whatever mm-hmm. your heart and your soul are showing you as far as action items in your life right now, those are stepping stones. Those are glimpses of what can happen in the near future, so to speak. But what I'm getting at is, if you form a discipline with honoring the inspiration of your heart and your soul, and here comes inspiration, and now it feels like the right time, and I bring it into fulfillment, I'm creating a new opportunity to be inspired now that I've kind of advanced the physical world by taking action on inspiration, and here comes another inspiration. Well, those two inspirations
yeah.
can be 10 minutes apart or 10 years apart. And if we're not really paying attention to our heart and our soul, we're like a high-power engine sitting in idle, sitting in neutral, because there's no flow of inspiration into form, inspiration into form, inspiration into form. And here I am 25 years later after the Cosmic 2x4, I'm amazed. I am so, my ego is giddy about what my soul is showing me for my life and my future. And I have trust and confidence that they'll come into fulfillment because I know I'm going to honor them. And so today, my ego feels excited about my life. Today, my ego feels fulfilled because I'm honoring my heart and my soul. At the end of today, my heart, my soul, and my ego will all have a sense of satisfaction because I've honored the reason why I'm here.
Well, I think also we do create our reality by our perception of it and making sure that you know, there is the creative aspect to everything you do. It does up the ante to a great degree as to what you see and what you embrace and what you bring into your life. So someone who has not been involved in this material to a great degree for any length of time, they pick up your book, where do they start? Where do they say, okay, I want to become a citizen king? What is their first step?
Well, everybody's going to arrive with a different path, so I'm not sure there's exactly the same action item right off the top. But in general, I would say, if you're just starting from scratch,
mm-hmm.
To journal, to capture the inspiration that you've had in your life so far? In other words, I didn't really see myself a writer of books by any means whatsoever. Had you asked me, am I going to be a published author, I would have said not only no, but hell no. And now I know I've got many books in the queue for them to come out of my persona. Now, so if you're just starting out, I would suggest to you meditation, no thought meditation is what I prefer. I have a book on at newhumanliving.com, Personal Power Fundamentals, which talks about your persona as a vehicle and how to tune it up, so to speak. I like no thought meditation. So if you're just starting out, why am I suggesting meditation? And why am I suggesting no thought meditation? Well, the monkey mind, the busy mind that most of us have, our runaway ego, so to speak, a vast majority of the thoughts that we have during our day-to-day lives don't serve us, but we're not conscious of them. Mm-hmm. And with no thought meditation, it's a very easy process. For 10 minutes a day, you start a timer and you stop your thoughts. And it's in that silence that new thoughts become vividly perceivable.
Yeah.
If we can't get out of our monkey mind, the vast majority of our thoughts we're not even conscious of.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing that you know, most people look at this and say, well, that's all well and good, but I'm not involved in this kind of a thing. And the no thought meditation is a great way to start. It really is. It's very simple. I mean, people are going to think it's simple, but not thinking anything for 10 minutes is not as easy as one would think.
And after a few months, you're going to feel a difference in your persona. And if 10 minutes gets easy, make it 20. When you first start out, so it's your very first time, don't use the timer on your phone because you can get texts, it can vibrate, it can ring. Put the phone in some other room, get a kitchen timer or whatever, start the timer and just stop your thoughts. And it'll go something like this. Well, this is bullshit. And you say, thank you. And when you say thank you, that's a period at the end of the paragraph. You're done with that topic. This is stupid. Thank you. We're not getting anything done. Thank you. We need to get gas in the car. Thank you. And that thank you is a period that ends that topic. And so when you first start out, you're going to say a whole lot of thank yous.
Yes.
And then slowly over time, your thoughts will start, I guess they give up hope. They give up any hope of being heard in that no thought meditation, and you'll create some silence, some stillness. And I tell you what, that stillness will be an extremely powerful thing. When you are able to create a stillness in your psyche, not only will your own thoughts become much more conscious, but you're going to recognize the languaging of everyone else. You're going to go to a business meeting, and in that silent, in that stillness, you're going to recognize a much deeper language that everybody's talking about. They're telling you an awful lot about themselves, but they don't recognize it because they're not watching their thoughts at all, and a lot of their thoughts are subconscious, and their subconscious motivation might not be what their conscious language is telling you.
And when you are in this process, where do these random thoughts come from? Is that the ego sending them to you, or is that just trivia that's out there floating that is coming in?
Yes. Well, sometimes we pick up on other people's thoughts. But if the ego is afraid of pain and you have scars in your psyche, you have heartache in your psyche, you have pain you don't want to look at in your psyche, your ego will prefer to have a busy mind. Your ego will prefer to keep a background chatter. You don't wanna feel. The ego will prefer to kind of stay numb, and it stays numb through busyness. We'll have habits in our mental constructs, and for example, we might get triggered emotionally, and that'll start a whole monologue of mental patterning. So some of our thoughts are based on reactions to emotions that were triggered 2 hours ago, if that makes sense.
It does. So when we are in a place where perhaps, you know, self-doubt comes in here, is that the ego?
Kind of like self. Sure. Self-doubt, self-worth, self-love, or the lack of it. That's not a product of the soul. We could talk about embodying the soul, but when we have derogatory thoughts towards ourselves, it's typically a reflection of the past when we've had unexpected results, challenging situations, a sense of failure, and I'll give you an example. I have this past life memory where I'm a general in an army. I'm like the big general, and we're all camped in tents, and we've been fighting this battle, this war, for a long time, and I'm deciding that the next day we're going to end it. The next day we're going to claim victory, and so we calculate our plans, and we the next day the army sets off and marches off into war, and it turns out there was an ambush, and there was a horrific slaughter, and I arrive the next morning and there's just a sea of dead. There's so many dead. And in my heart, I'm bawling my head off, and it's like I promise myself I will never speak from a powerful point of view regarding the condition of others. And so in that moment, I kind of galvanized myself as not being appropriate for me to make powerful choices, to make powerful decisions. And so I've created a karmic stigma that fast forward in lifetimes, I might not see myself as a leader. I might not see myself as someone to make decisions that affect a large group of people. So that imprinting comes from the response, the perhaps the sense of guilt, perhaps the sense of shame, all the families that have lost their loved ones, the country that might have lost their sovereignty. I mean, there's so many ways that the heartache I felt in that moment could totally galvanize me towards the idea of being a powerful leader for the masses. And fast forward to 2020, we're hungry for authentic leaders. We're hungry for powerful people, not to have dominion over us, but to have a sense of confidence, to have a sense of leadership, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a powerful thing. Understand where some of your material comes from. And I know when I was going through your book, there were moments where every week I read a book. I read a certain amount of the book each day. And after I'd gotten, into the book significantly so that I was seeing the heart, the spiritual, and the ego, I would start to reflect on choices that I had made in my life. And I would say to myself, okay, where did that choice come from? Did it come from my ego? Did it come from my heart? Did it come from my soul? And the older I've gotten, more and more and more of my choices come from heart and soul. But there's still some that do come from the ego, but not 2 years ago, 3 years ago. My son, I was in Connecticut, and my son had some appointment he had to go to in Boston, and he stopped by and he said, let me take you to dinner before my meeting, the next day. We were sitting at dinner, and out of my mouth comes, I think it's time I sold the house and moved. And he just, the fork was halfway to his mouth, and he said, okay, where are you going to move to? And I said, Nashville. And he said, well, I didn't see that coming. And I sat there, and I looked at him, and I said, neither did I. Walking into the restaurant, the idea of selling my house and moving had not entered my mind.
Right.
Yet at the table, this comes out of my mouth. And the next day, I got a realtor, and I did sell the house and moved to Nashville. But I trusted it because it was so easy to flow out of my mouth.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And, that I think is, I don't know if that was soul or heart or both, but I would say it probably was soul, because it turns up the condo I moved to has a graveyard in the backyard, and it's a family cemetery for the people that founded this town, and it turns out that I'm related to one of the guys buried in my backyard.
Wow.
He had a sister named Hattie. Hattie married a man named Aaron DeLong. And I'm related to the same guy that this guy is related to. So you can't tell me that somehow my soul, 3 years prior, had it all figured out. Now, why?
Yeah.
I don't know, but here I am.
And we have the ego is kind of the lowest common denominator, because you had that inspiration to move, but your ego could have said, the hell if I'm moving, I'm staying right here. I don't think we ever get to the cosmic 2x4. We don't get to the train wreck unless we ignore our heart and our soul for a long time. And we get way out of step with the reason we're here. I like the visual of static electricity. So how many people have shuffled their sock, shuffled their feet across the carpet and then touch the light switch and they get a spark?
Uh-huh.
Well, before you start shuffling your feet, you haven't accumulated any static electricity. And I would relate that to the day you were born, you didn't have an ego. And
yeah.
Then as you go through your life, you're accumulating this charge. Well, the charge is not you in the long-term sense. In other words, your ego is not you. It's a construct of you. It's a static electric charge that you've put on top of your persona, so to speak. And I'd like to suggest that I think we're going to see a new era of people that cleanse their personal energy persona, and the analogy would be to discharge their the karmic stigma of their ego, your soul cannot interfere. Your soul cannot deviate from truth. Your soul doesn't take on the negative karma of your persona. That is an accumulation of the wake of your ego, so to speak. And so, in other words, in your truest sense, if you were to go to the core of your being, the entry point, so to speak, the infinite well of consciousness that is eternally streaming into your persona, that consciousness is pure. It's source consciousness. It's God consciousness. And then we layer it up with karma over many lifetimes. The cycle of the soul is to start off from light. We have no stigma, no karma. And we choose to go into the darkness. And if you've incarnated on this planet, your soul has chosen to go to the very edge of darkness. And we do that because a calm sea has never made a skilled sailor. In order for a soul to master the art of the human persona, the human genome, the soul chooses to take its personas into darker and darker karma. And here on this planet, we're in a very dark karmic tsunami. But I suggest to you that it's possible to cleanse and purify your personal energy persona. In other words, to discharge the static buildup of your ego and your karma and purify your body persona so your soul can descend into your physical form. And I haven't spoken about this very much, but I've got a lot of hits about it lately. I think some of the attributes of Jesus was there was no separation from the persona he showed you and the purity of his soul. And so for us to purify ourselves, our soul is not going to accumulate mud and muck to come meet us in the untruth of ourselves. But if we purify ourselves, then our soul can, we're literally creating a vessel that is in resonance with source consciousness, and then the soul can descend into our physical form, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. And you know, it's you know, during these times that are challenging, so many people have shut down, and yet, I see the two extremes. I see people who have shut down and quit, and I see people who are absolutely shining and just being so manifestational, it's amazing. And the middle ground isn't as crowded as one would think. And I think these times have, you know, it's either or. You shut down and, you know, you turn off your personal power and you just feel like you're being booted around and you're being taken advantage of, and you quit. It doesn't mean you die. It just means that you aren't utilizing your own personal power to move your life along and bring greater light into your reality. So what are some of the ways that people really do shut down their own personal power?
They avoid their feelings. They don't challenge their thoughts and beliefs from the past. I get it that it can be tough to go through some of the heartache of the human persona. There can be very, very difficult times, and sometimes on this planet, just to come out of the muck and the mire, if you're a woman that's living in a domestic violence situation and your husband's beating the crap out of you, or vice versa, your wife's beating the crap out of you, you can go either way, and you have no sense of self, no self-esteem, no anything, to come out of that and just stand on your own feet for the first time perhaps in your life, that's a flipping miracle. That's astounding to accomplish that. And I guess what I'm getting at is that sometimes our souls come here to perhaps just break even. but to your point, like for myself, I had no clue, and I can't emphasize this enough, I had no clue that I had an immense amount of anger in my psyche. And that anger was ruling out vast arenas of choices. Well, I was afraid to have the feeling. My ego was afraid of the feeling. Why was my ego afraid to have the feeling? Well, the survival mechanism that I put in place as an infant would see the fear in my mother's eyes, would see the fear in my siblings' eyes when the feeling of anger came out of my father. And so I would choose as a young child, the last of seven, I don't want to be the reason why my mother is afraid. I don't want to be the reason why the family goes into this very uncomfortable feeling. And so I'll choose at a very young age to suppress. I will not allow it to get to the surface. I will suppress any anger that comes up in my psyche. Well, I was a walking zombie. You talk about not engaged. I ended up on a shrink's couch because all my relationships were getting pinched off. And they were getting pinched off by this immense amount of emotion in my persona that not only was I not aware of, but I was also scared to death of. But after I overcame the fear of feeling anger, anger is a real gift. Anger is a good thing. Anger is like rocket fuel. So if I feel anger, it's showing me in the moment how I'm being incongruent with what I would prefer. The anger is showing me in the moment how I have made choices that doesn't honor my truth. And with the message, there's this raw rocket fuel of energy called anger that I can take as a fuel. And it's like, here's the problem, here's the cure. That fuel of anger is a very high energy consciousness that I can direct in the moment of incongruency to help accelerate myself with motivation and choices and courage and bravery to break out of the old stigma. So get in touch with your feelings.
Absolutely. I think all of us have had those 2x4 moments. I've had a couple of them. And when they occur, it's like, oh my, this is a 2x4 moment. Where has my head been? You know?
Right.
It's like I said, the older you get, the more philosophically you can look at these moments when it feels like the world's coming apart, and it's not, and life will not end, and there's so much potential out there. I don't know how to tell people, explain to people how they open that portal to potential. 'Cause mine got opened. And you know, it was through life experiences and my own work on myself and stuff like that, that suddenly I became so aware of potential. Nobody was saying, you can't do this, and if somebody said it, it would be maybe not the way you think, but I bet you money I can achieve it. You know, it's infinite possibilities when you open yourself to the potential of the universe. And you know, sometimes doors open and sometimes they don't. And if they don't open, then something else comes up, you know, around. I know that when I did the deck of cards, I never intended to publish it. And a publisher came and found me. And I thought, oh, that's hysterical. He wants to publish my paintings. You know, I can't believe that he's, you know, I'm not an artist. And darned if they aren't still out there. And it was like, it wasn't, no, 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 it can't possibly be. It was like, run with it. Sure, what the heck? It was kind of like trust that somebody, I used to tell people, I used to serve in the pulpit, and it was like, I always wait for the call. I don't place it myself because it could be a wrong number. But if I get the call, I absolutely say yes to it, no matter what it is, so long as it's not against the law or my morals. And I think that's where a lot of people need to be. It's the, you know, throw self-doubt out the window, because you're going to be your own worst enemy. You know, I'm in my 70s, so I'm not going to be Miss Teenage America this time. But, you know, next life, you never know. But you know, it's sort of like always expect the unexpected, because it's always there. And if you're waiting for unusual to happen, it truly will. And I think that so many people today have shut their own personal power down. And you know, you can, and my way of breaking that logjam is telling everybody, first of all, no thinking meditation is a great thing to do. Jigsaw puzzles, again, you put the pieces of a puzzle together, it's almost reflective of putting the pieces of your life back together. Being creative in any way, shape, or form. If you want to take things apart and put them back together, that's creative. If you want to do an art project, that's creative. If you want to have a garden, that's creative. If you just be creative in any way, shape, or form every day. And that starts to add fuel to the movement within you. And I think that I recommend, I don't know if you do, but I recommend a journal of some sort that keeps track of dreams, daydreams, and synchronicities. Because when you recognize them, when you give them validity and you put it in writing down in a journal, you're reminding yourself that magic does happen in your life, and then it snowballs. How do you feel about something like that?
Oh, indeed. To write it down, to write down the inspiration is very powerful. You're bringing it into physical form. Your life, as a listener, your life can go one of millions of ways. I suggest if you bring your heart and your soul more and more into every day, every hour, even every minute of your life, and you develop a relationship with your heart and your soul, your life can expand at a rate incomprehensible to your past. It's pretty clear, I think, to people that the collective consciousness of humanity has been cracked open by this wonderful gift called 2020. The collective consciousness has been cracked open, and a lot of our life past, you, me, the listeners, had a sharp left turn installed at 2021. In other words, there's so much incongruency in the collective consciousness of our past. We have a single monetary system. I'm not going to go into this stuff too much, but in 2008, our single currency collapsed and the whole flipping world was turned on its head. Well, karmically, monolithic systems like single internet, single banking systems, single healthcare, these are karmic train wrecks. And here we are at 2021, and it's becoming evident that the collective consciousness wants a new narrative, a new paradigm. Well, who the hell is going to bring that into form if it's not flesh and bones? So your heart and your soul might be showing you a new academic modality or process, and you might say to yourself, who the hell am I to change the education industry? Well, that might be exactly what your soul had in mind before you were born. That might be exactly why you're here, to change the education system of a country or a planet. When we get inspired with big visions that seem like drastic tangents to the way things were in the past, I think we're gonna hear more and more people talk about that kind of thing that said, I don't know why I was in education for 25 years and now I'm getting this inspiration to stand up and change it all. It's exactly the kind of person that would be designed, so to speak, as a life path to have a very significant change of direction in your personal life. And so as the collective gets broken open, and here we are in 2021, I suggest millions of us, legions of us, will be called to be the new alchemists, the new mystics, the new sages, in the sense that we will be the ones bringing the divine wisdom from our inspiration into form through our personas. And Citizen King is a book that helps you prepare to do just that.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk a lot about dreams and how they help to fulfill our life purpose. How does that work?
Well, there's free will. In other words, the more you open up yourself, the more, in other words, like, I can say to my soul, look, I'm tired. I'm not interested in doing any of the new crap. I'm just going to tread water and die. Maybe it'll go get a 2x4 and crack you open, but the ego can kind of set the pace. And when we talk about dreams, the more we show up for ourselves, the bigger our dreams become. If I'm a homeless person and I have no sense of self-worth and I don't trust reality and I have a negative connotation as to that aspect of life, my soul's not going to show me a dream so far away from that I can't accept it. It's going to dangle a carrot in front of me that will move me forward, maybe get out on my own or get a place of my own or start taking care of myself. In other words, the dreams that we have are a reflection of our willingness, our aptitude, how well we know ourselves. And so our dreams expand as we show up for them. Our dreams are, I suggest there's a vision of heaven on earth, and many, many souls are here to help put that puzzle together to create the new narrative of what it would look like to have heaven on earth. So you can get dreams from your heart and your soul, or you can flat out daydream a dream. So I ask you, what does heaven look like? If you were to look at 2019 and look at the culture of humanity on the planet, the economic system, the health system, the governance, the education, 2020 showed us that clearly we had some serious stigmas involved. So here we are with more or less an opportunity to write a new slate. You can daydream the notion of what heaven might look like. For myself, it's the empowerment of the individual. It's the empowerment of the human persona. Heaven won't be experienced in anything but consciousness. Heaven is something that consciousness experiences. So there's human beings on this planet today that are living in a hell, famine, stress, torture, abuse. And there's also people that are living in heaven today. They've got a place of their own. They've got a new opportunity on life. So when we talk about dreams in the future, we can sit around and wait for our soul to inspire us, but I think what can happen when we daydream about what heaven might look like, we can kind of co-create with our soul. In other words, my ego can say, well, it'd be nice if electrical power had many, many different ways of being resolved instead of a single number in the phone book. In most of our situations, electrical power comes from the power company. Well, there's no choice in that. That's a karmic train wreck. So if I were to dream the future, it would be many different ways that that kind of a need would be fulfilled. And so when my ego dreams of what might look better, I'm opening up my mental space for my soul to give me that inspiration.
Gotcha. I know that when I think about heaven on earth, it to me is when people speak of heaven as a place the spirit goes, so many people are thinking of a physical place, and yet the spirit is not physical. It's etheric, and when it moves into the other realm, that is etheric as well. So that it's hard to conceive of what they think heaven is when there's no shape or form. So I prefer to have heaven here where I can see and feel it and experience it. And I think one of the things that I see so much is that I see a lot of people with joy in their hearts, and they're expressing their joy more so than they did a decade ago. I think the element of laughter that I see with people is far more present than it was a decade or so ago. So that joy on some level is being expressed in times of difficulty where it wasn't being expressed in times of plenty, which I think is phenomenal.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, our free will doesn't ever end. So the traditional religious notion that if we don't piss God off and we can compress ourselves into the righteous template, that God will find favor on us and deliver us to heaven. Well, in any moment we have free will, so we've arrived at this metaphorical place of heaven. Still doesn't mean we can't bugger it up with our free will. Nothing's eternal as far as choices. Heaven and hell, I suggest, is a today experience. The only time you'll ever experience anything is in this now. So heaven and hell is what you can or you might or might not experience all along the journey in every moment.
But when you even think of it's a perspective. I mean, there were people in concentration camps that had joy in their hearts, and that's what carried them through that horrific experience.
Right.
It's a matter of what you perceive, how you perceive it, and what you choose to put in your heart. And, you know, that said, you do talk about self-love and unconditional love. So how does our relationship with love relate to our personal power?
Oh, my God. question of the millennium.
Thank you, Tom.
How can you embody power without self-love? Now, I mean power, the big stuff, the Moses parting the seas, the really big notion, the divine idea of a human persona. Self-love, I suggest, is the one of the most prominent regulators of our ability to show up for ourselves. If we were to truly love ourselves, that I think we would, out of that self-love, choose a life path that honored our potential. How can you be in self-love and deny the expression of your potential? How can you be in self-love and sit on your hands through the journey? It's not like love has any requirements, but imagine like loving a child as a parent. You have these ideas of what's possible for the child, and it's out of that love that you nurture and support that child for that potential to unfold. And self-love is no different. Self-love, the more and more you embody self-love, the more serious, and I don't mean that, serious can be a swear word, I think, but the more authentically you show up for your life, the more you embody self-love, the more you value your life purpose, the more you embody self-love, the more intentional and focused you are about fulfilling the reason why you're here.
Okay, so self-love has to do with our soul's purpose here this lifetime. So where does a parent's responsibility change when you're guiding I have a son. As a parent, I perceived it was important for him to have a college education to follow his bliss, whatever that bliss was, so long as he got a college education. And I think the only thing that would have sent that would have raised red flags all over the place and sent me screaming to wherever the campus was if he said, I'm going to go for liberal arts. You know, I said, at one point I said, I don't care what you choose, just choose something to start off with. You can always switch and go to someplace else later. And he said after he graduated, he said, no matter what I suggested, you said, go for it. And he said, you never tried to manipulate me. I said, oh, there would have been one place I would have greatly manipulated you. I would have ripped you out of college. And it was, he said, what was it? Now that he's graduated, I said, if you had said liberal arts to me, you would have been on the next plane home. So, and that's just me. That's just me. But so where does a parent's responsibility end and you have to let go and allow that child, that soul that you brought into this world to take up their own journey and become responsible for their own soul purpose journey?
Yeah, you can't decide for them, can you? You can't.
No.
You can't reach over their shoulder and grab the wheel of their life and give it a yank. And it can be a challenging thing to watch them. Where's that threshold? I mean, in a general sense, it's the age of 18, so to speak, in this culture. But at some point in their life, man, it's I like what you said about he didn't feel pressured. He didn't feel strong-armed. He didn't feel your arm reaching over his shoulder trying to steer his life.
No.
And, I mean, ultimately the sailor's got to feel the waves. And sometimes as a parent, we want them to avoid some of the tempests that we ourselves has bumped up against. And sometimes their soul wants to drag them through the weeds. And our egos can say, well, that can't be helpful. But, Barbara,
well, I guess in a way,
how did the train wrecks of your life change who you are?
What was my 2x4 moment?
Yeah, and how did it change you? I mean, your ego might not have chose it.
I think the second 2x4 moment was at some point, gosh, it was like 30 or 40 years ago now, people were saying to me, you should be in the metaphysical field full time. You know, this is what you should be doing. And I kept saying to them, do you realize, you know, I'm teaching. I've got 2 masters. Do you realize how much money I'm making? And the perks I get, yada, yada. But when I retire, I'll do this full time. But until I retire, you know, I'm going to ride this money train, actually, is
right.
What it was. And so I caution people about making statements like that if apparently your soul has a different idea. And I was involved in a car accident. And part of the car accident, there was damage to my neck and my back, but, you know, that's not, it was serious at the time, but it's not serious right now. And I had vertigo, and so I was unable to continue teaching, and there was a lawsuit because of the car accident, and I was involved in trial stuff for 5 years, and I wasn't able to work, and I was shoved into early retirement because of it, which enabled me to go into this field full-time, which is where I belong. But because I had said, not until I retire will I do this,
right.
The universe just arranged a car accident that had me through 5 years of trauma, but I had said, when I retire, I'll do this full-time, funny part of the story, one that I don't often repeat, is that at one point, I had a son full-time in college, too. At one point, my mother said, and they stopped my paycheck, the school system did, and I ran out of money. And my mother said, you know, I can give you a place to live and I can, you know, feed you, but I can't take care of your bills. What are you going to do? And I said, you know, the universe said they wanted me in this position full time, so I'm going to wait and see what happens. And I had signed up for disability insurance and I had made one payment to it. And somebody finally contacted me and said, you know, you have the disability insurance, you know, why don't you claim on it? And I said, I only put one payment in. Well, apparently it was in effect. And so I applied for it and got it. And it was a significant amount of money. And my mother said, oh, well, great. Now, and I had stopped doing readings because I didn't feel that was appropriate. I figured if the universe wanted me in the field, they'd prove it. So this one check was coming in, and she said, now are you going to start doing readings? And I said, no, this one check does not cover what my regular paycheck is. And about 6 months went on, and someone said, are you going to apply for SSI? And I said, I have a job. I just can't do it right now, but I have a job. And they said, no, it's your money. Apply for it. And I went in, and I applied, and they said, you know, this could take 6 months to a year. And I said, I'm fine with that. I was just covering all my bases. Well, 3 weeks later, I was approved, and another check came in that was equal to the first check. And my mother said, okay, now are you going to go back and do readings and you know, start bringing in money? And I said, no, the two together don't equal a paycheck. No. I can't afford to live that way. And so then I was shoved into early retirement. The school system made it impossible for me to actually teach. So part of our agreement was they shoved me into retirement early in my 40s, and I said to and with medical and everything connected to it, and you know, way early, like 20 years early for the pension, but the pension check came in, and it was almost exactly what a paycheck was, and the lawsuit was finally settled, and there was an annuity, and that, and the four checks together, here's the cool part, the four checks together exactly equaled what I brought in my paycheck per month.
Wow.
And I said to my mother, the universe must really want me in this field. I went back to work.
Wow.
So.
Well, then, would you say, now I'm jumping to conclusions here, so please correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
It was your ego that said, well, I'm not going to do it until I retire. And so your soul is sitting there with 500,000 trillion different ways it could manifest what you need in your life, this vast, vast nonlinear consciousness that's part of your persona, and your ego says, I will not do this until this happens.
I think my ego, yeah, my ego was saying, go ahead.
And if your ego had said, now I don't pretend to know the linear path that this would unfold, but if your ego had said, soul, I am open to your guidance. Show me the path without these constructs of, well, I have to wait till I retire, that's kind of what I'm getting about in the book about mental constructs, is the mental construct of, well, I'm not going to do it until this, until this happens.
Reality was I was a single parent.
Right.
So I had to have a certain amount of money in order to support me and my son.
You needed a certain amount of money in order for you to trust that you and your son would be supported.
Yes. And
how that
so
support
when
support could have showed up might not have had financial form, but nonetheless supported you nonetheless.
Yeah. So
I'm fuddling with it here a little bit to just show how there could have been many dynamics ways this could have unfolded.
Oh sure. But I think that the 2x4 was I didn't trust my heart and my soul enough to take that flying leap.
Right.
When I had a child that I had to support too.
Yes.
And so it was ego. I was looking at the finances and saying, I have to be able to provide for us, and I don't see any other way. I mean, when the car accident happened, and I had always said, when I retire, I'll certainly go into this field because I love it, and I do, and it's been fabulous to me for half a century. But I'm pretty sure it was my analytical ego that was saying, I can't risk it because I have responsibilities. And it was ego, sure. if my soul and my heart had been in it, I would have, you know, thrown caution to the wind and said, okay, let's just retire from teaching, let go of the pension, let go of the security, and yet there was another part of me that really believes, truly believes, that spiritual gifts should not be charged for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was part of my dilemma. I really believe that anything of a spiritual nature, I mean, you can write a book and get money for the book, and that's just fine. That's, you're getting paid for your time and your energy, and you're giving spiritual information away. But for me personally, the kind of work I was doing, I felt I really should be giving it away and not charging for it. And
right.
And that's why the radio show has no sponsors. There's no money connected to it. It's a free, it's a giveaway. My website has material on it. It's a free giveaway. Anything of a spiritual nature that I have, I will give away.
Right.
And earlier
in the conversation, I was talking about the metaphor of a muscle in our body. If we don't use the muscle and then we have to use the muscle, we might come up wanting. And when it's our relationship with our ego to our heart and our soul, if we don't take exercises to grow that, to flex that muscle, to establish a connection, to establish a sense of trust, then when the big challenges come, we won't be in a mental space to trust many of the possible outcomes. So to mentally exercise your ego's relationship with your heart and your soul, when the consequences aren't so major, my heart, my soul, I want to learn how to play guitar. Surprise me. Well, playing guitar is not going to decide your life. And here's an opportunity for inspiration to come up. And now you're developing a rapport with your inspiration. And so that's what I'm getting at. In order for your heart and your soul to have sway, in order for your heart and your soul to have some say in how your everyday life unfolds, it takes a rapport between your ego and your heart and your soul. It takes some trust, and that comes through practice.
Well, oh, yeah.
The more you engage your inspiration, the more you can become intuitive about your inspiration. But if you sit and ignore your inspiration, you're not going to have an opportunity to build your intuition or your trust. And so when the cosmic 2x4 comes, you're going to act, people will tend to act more out of fear, and that collapses many, many possibilities. So developing the trust, flexing the muscle, so to speak, between your ego's trust of your inspiration, when the consequences aren't so severe, can kind of bond and anchor that relationship. So I suggest it makes navigating the more challenging times in your life much easier, because more possibilities are something you're willing to look at and take action on.
Oh, yeah. And I think that over the years, I have come to, you know, the ego every now and then will say things like, "You sure?" And it's like, "What do I have to lose? What do I have to lose? Come on. Come on board. Let's go for a ride." And you know, so that it's sort of like there is a greater trust now than there was 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
And it's sort of like you recognize where the ego is stepping in and saying, remember me, and it's like, it's, yeah, you know, it's an old friend, and it has changed over the years for sure. And every now and then, I picture my ego as somebody that walks around with a parachute and a seatbelt on constantly. Because it never knows where I'm going to go, you know, at any moment in time.
Right.
But,
very,
you know,
nice.
I will definitely, it's, you know, you having a personal relationship with all parts of yourself is really, I think, one of the important parts of this book. In that you recognize ego, you recognize heart, you recognize soul, and you have to form a trinity that is an unusual trinity, but if they work in congress, life takes on a whole new perspective, and it is exciting.
Once you've tasted the fruit, once you've developed a rapport, there's no going back. It's like if my soul were to present to me today the notion of writing a book, had I never written anything, based on my relationship, it'd be like, hey, I've got a new paradigm. I've got a new way to express myself in this lifetime, and I value that inspiration. I value the tangents. I value the expansion of the vision of what my life might be. And that is so contrary to where I was before the Cosmic 2x4. I wouldn't have entertained any notion of my life outside of me being a broadcast television engineer, period. And so I'm just so damn happy that I've got this vibrant part of me that's dynamic and fluid and lucid, and it loves me so dearly, and it feeds me these new narratives, new paradigms, new opportunities, new adventures. Damn, that's the good stuff. I don't want to miss out on any of that.
Well, and I think because people today are more and more aware of consciousness and cosmic consciousness and group consciousness and what's going on in the world, and the fact that we've been so isolated for so long and now we're able to get back together, there's a new form of communication going on here that is really going to, I think, take a decade or so to really take root. But I do feel the change in the frequency that people are putting out.
Amen. And a change in frequency is a change in outcome.
Yeah. And
it's a new octave of wisdom, so to speak.
Absolutely. And people are okay with talking about stuff like that, where a decade ago they weren't. Or if you had talked about different archetypes of love, or if you've talked about the ego and the soul and the heart and different levels of consciousness. I mean, these are topics that would not have been talked about a decade or two ago. And now just about everybody is hungry for this kind of information, which you know, I know this book was published a while back, but when was it published, actually?
2015.
Okay, so it's 7 years. I think that people are more open today to the material that you've got in this book than maybe they were 7 years ago. I think.
Oh my God!
You know,
when I wrote the book, like 2 or 3 years later after I wrote the book, I'm like, this isn't resonating with anyone, and and now today, I'm like, man, this is resonating with everyone. I jumped the gun about 5 years.
Well, you're ahead of the pack for sure. I think that especially because we've been so isolated, people are reading more. People are doing more in, you know, personal internal work. And it's just, it's amazing to me to see the changes in people. And I think what I like, what I love about what you've got here is that there's no dogma connected to it. You know, it isn't,
right.
you have to do this, and this. It's you give people, you know, a roadmap, and you say, follow it in your own way, and you're going to be just fine, because there's change can't help but happen.
I'm very careful with dogma,
uh-huh.
or lack thereof.
Well, dogma is what creates the ego, isn't it?
Well, the tagline to my platform, New Human Living, is pure, authentic you. Pure, authentic
yeah.
you. Purity and authenticity, I'm not defining any attributes about yourself per se. I'm not saying you're brave or strong or this or that. Purity and authenticity don't have any attributes of themselves, so to speak. And so I'm super very careful about projecting my crap on other people. I'm very, very, very careful with my language to say, you have full dominion of who you are. The shadow and the light, the storm and the calm are all expressions of the soul's journey. And if your soul's asking you to push through darkness, and I say, well, it's important that you feel joy, and I'm contradictory. So even positive words like joy and whatnot, I try to leave it out of the equation and just say, tune into who you are and the impulse for you in this moment, because there's 100 trillion different trajectories, and with billions of people on the planet, every one of them are legit in some way or another.
And everybody's journey is different.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, same source, but the way we get there is you know, it depends on what the soul of this lifetime is working on. What my soul this lifetime is working on is not what my son's soul is working on, and it's not,
right.
you know, it's sort of like my issues that I am here this lifetime to work on, to change, my challenges or my glitches or my knee-jerk reaction or whatever. you know, other people have managed to go beyond that particular aspect and have other knee-jerk stuff going on. So it's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
And yet the quality of love that they radiate is all singular.
Yeah.
I mean,
very nice.
Self-love and unconditional love are the same. I mean, with every person. If you are to that point within your life, then what radiates from you is something that other people will recognize as, gee, there's something special there. I wonder how they got there or what pills are they taking. Yeah.
Right. When you can cleanse the karmic stigmas in your personal energy persona and heal your relationship with self-love, when you emit love, the universe reflects back to you that love. And it's really amazing. It's very curious how love can show you new ways to see every aspect of our human demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And ascended masters and beings of light and whatnot, they come into this karmic tsunami and they have love for every single player, every single, the shadow and the light, the darkness and the light. And because they are beings of love, the I suggest that's the realm of heaven in this moment. If you can embody self-love and unconditional love for yourself and humanity, you will experience heaven on earth. As you shine love, so to speak, out of your persona, that's what's going to come reflected back to you, and that quantum mirror, so to speak, will create the experience of heaven on earth in your persona today.
Well, I think also people have to realize we're here to work on ourselves. And so while certainly it is possible to have the self-love and unconditional love and all of that, we're still working on ourselves. The reason the soul came into a physical reality was to perfect aspects of itself that it couldn't do on the etheric level. So it's we're here to learn, we're here to grow, and absolutely, I call them mountaintop experiences. Everybody hopefully has had several of them or many of them where you really know pure peace and joy, and then you're back to the, you know, to the rest of life. But we're here to grow and to learn, and we're here because we have aspects of ourselves that we want to enhance and stretch and move into new directions with. And do we have moments where there is peace and love and just a warm, fuzzy feeling, and that's all there is it happens. It certainly, absolutely happens. But we're still working on parts of ourselves. So I have a question for you. It's you've written two books now.
We've come to questions. Oh, shit.
More questions, yes. You've written two books that I've read, both of them. Is there another one in the works?
Actually, I wrote one before those two. It's only available on the newhumanliving.com website, Personal Power Fundamentals.
Uh-huh.
And that talks about how we take on karma and load our psyche up, and how to purify our karma and release it and cleanse it. Is there another book coming up?
Yeah,
I'm sure there is. probably about a dozen books before I croak. The Citizen King and the Forgiven Sinner books, I very much appreciated those, and they're. I guess I'm talking out loud. They're kind of informational books.
And
yeah. I'm toying with the idea of writing a fictional book with metaphysical principles in a storyline instead of a Citizen King is information, basically. But
yeah.
Like you, I'm a radio show host, and I've noticed many authors have deviated from the traditional type of book and went to books of stories, of fiction, so to speak, and woven the spiritual principles into the storyline. So I'm toying with that. I'm at a crossroads about what format my next book will be in, but certainly I think there'll always be another book in the hopper.
Oh, yeah. Well, I noticed that with the pandemic and the lockdown, authors are no longer writing 300-page books. They're writing 500-page books. So I'm hopeful that the lockdown means that people won't be writing as lengthy a tome as they have been. A lot easier to get through 300 pages than it is to get through 500 and 900 pages.
Oh, yeah.
So if people are looking for you, what is the website they go to?
newhumanliving.com. New Human Living is a platform I created in 2009. It's a platform to help you discover your truth. And on the store page there, all my books are a single click away, regardless of what format you want them in. And if you want to learn more about me as an individual, lesjensen.com tells you who I am and how my philosophies came about.
Well, they're certainly great philosophies, and I think writing your books has expanded, I would bet, your understanding of them a lot better, too. I find when I'm trying to explain something and I'm writing it down, I find new nuances that I hadn't seen before coming out. So, but it just feels like there's got to be more. I mean, there's only three books here. My goodness, you know, get going.
I hear you.
It feels like it's time for another book. And the material you have is just so priceless and so poignant and so important. It seems like, you know, I highly recommend both of your books. I think they're really great books. They're great books to study from and grow from. And, you know, whatever you put out there is going to be of help to people, too, so that while you're exercising, growing, and learning is a wonderful way to provide information to other people to do the same thing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And to be a living example of your philosophy is even better. So
I polish my persona every night. I try to be a spiritual yahoo with a personality, with a little pizzazz, a little spunk, a little spice, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm always looking to be able to be better, to give more, to share more, to be a font of laughter for people so they can learn from the laughter, probably is a
right.
better way to look at it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'll happily show all of my mistakes to everybody just so that they can avoid those and make their own. But I just noticed the time, and I'm so very grateful for your being here with me tonight, and I so appreciate what you've done so far, and I'm looking forward to see what comes next.
Maybe it's time I write another book.
I think so. I will keep in touch and make sure I push you along a little bit here and there. But thank you so much for being here tonight. I so appreciate your taking the time to talk to me and our listeners that are out there.
I want to thank you for having me. I've been on this show, and I just love the two-hour format, and it's such a casual conversation, but yet it really fosters kind of a deeper dialogue. And so I want to thank you, Barbara, for having me on your show. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks again, and I will be in touch. You can be very sure of that. So, everybody, I want to thank you all for listening. This will be up on YouTube shortly, probably tomorrow. Check it out. And if you like what you see, please subscribe, because that's how we know you're listening. Tomorrow night, Mark has a wonderful show already planned and in the works, so do tune in tomorrow night for that one. And keep coming back, because we have wonderful, unusual, new and unique stuff coming. Good night now.